Every member of a real estate agent's family will be greatly affected by the decisions a real estate agent makes about the business. There's just no way around it. Unfortunately, like most business people, real estate agents tend to compartmentalize their lives. They view their business as a profession, what they do, and therefore, it's none of their family's business. "This has nothing to do with you," says the real estate agent to his wife with blind conviction. "This has nothing to do with you," says the real estate agent to her husband with blind conviction. "I leave work at the office and family at home." And with equal conviction, I say, not true. In actuality, your family and real estate business are inextricably linked to one another. What's happening in your company is also happening at home. Consider the following and ask yourself if each is true. If you're angry at work, you're also angry at home. If you're out of control at your real estate business, you're equally out of control at home. If you're having trouble with money at your company, you're also having trouble with money at home. If you have communication problems at your company, you're also having communication problems at home. If you don't trust in your company, you don't trust at home. If you're secretive at your company, you're equally secretive at home, and you're paying a huge price for it. The truth is that your company and your family are one, and you're the link, or you should be. Because if you try to keep your company and your family apart, if your company and your family are strangers, you will effectively create two separate worlds that can never wholeheartedly serve each other. Two worlds that split each other apart. Let me tell you the story of Steve and Peggy Walsh. The Walshes met in college. They were partners in a study club for a finance class. Steve, a real estate student, and Peggy in business administration. When the discussion started to wander beyond market analysis and investment theory and into their personal lives, they discovered they had a lot in common. By the end of the course, they weren't just talking in class. They were talking on the phone every night, and not about finance. Steve thought Peggy was absolutely brilliant, and Peggy considered Steve the most passionate man she knew. It wasn't long before they were engaged and planning their future together. A week after graduation, they were married in a lovely garden ceremony in Peggy's childhood home. While Steve studied real estate at a local school, Peggy entered a business master's program nearby. Over the next few years, the couple worked hard to keep their finances afloat. They worked long hours and studied constantly. They were often exhausted and struggled to make ends meet. But through it all, they were committed to what they were doing and, of course, to each other. After graduating, Steve became an agent in a busy real estate business, while Peggy began working in a large corporation nearby. Soon afterward, the couple had their first son, and Peggy decided to take some time off to be with him. Those were the good years. Steve and Peggy loved each other very much, were active members in their church, participated in community organizations, and spent quality time together. The Walshes considered themselves one of the most fortunate families they knew. But work became troublesome. Steve grew increasingly frustrated with the way the company was run. I want to go into business for myself, he announced one night at the dinner table. I want to start my own business. Steve and Peggy spent many nights talking about the move. Was it something they could afford? Did Steve really have the skills necessary to make a real estate business a success? Were there enough clients and deals to go around? What impact would such a move have on Peggy's career at the local business, their lifestyle, their son, their relationship? They asked all the questions they thought they needed to answer before Steve went into business for himself, but they never really drew up a concrete plan. Finally, tired of talking and confident that he could handle whatever he might face, Steve committed to starting his own real estate business. Because she loved and supported him, Peggy agreed, offering her own commitment to help in any way she could. So Steve quit his job, took out a second mortgage on their home, and leased a small office nearby. In the beginning, things went well. A housing boom had hit the town, and new families were pouring into the area. Steve had no trouble getting new clients. His company expanded, quickly outgrowing his office. Within a year, Steve had employed an office manager, Clarissa, to run the front desk and handle the administrative side of the business. He also hired a bookkeeper, Tim, to handle the finances. Steve was ecstatic with the progress his young company had made. He celebrated by taking his wife and son on vacation to Italy. Of course, managing a business was more complicated and time-consuming than working for someone else. Steve not only supervised all the jobs Clarissa and Tim did, but also was continually looking for work to keep everyone busy. When he wasn't scanning real estate websites to stay abreast of what was going on in the field or attending industry events to stay current, he was showing houses, wading through client paperwork, or speaking with the local real estate commission. He also found himself spending more and more time on the telephone, dealing with client complaints and nurturing relationships. As the months went by and more clients came through the door, Steve had to spend even more time just trying to keep his head above water. By the end of its second year, the business, now employing 2 full-time and 2 part-time people, had moved to a larger office downtown. The demands on Steve's time had grown with the company. He began leaving home earlier in the morning and returning home later at night. He drank more. He rarely saw his son anymore. For the most part, Steve was resigned to the problem. He saw the hard work as essential to building the sweat equity, as it was called, he had long heard about. Money was also becoming a problem for Steve. Although the business was growing like crazy, money always seemed scarce when it was really needed. When Steve had worked for somebody else, he'd been paid 2x a month. In his own company, he often had to wait, sometimes for months. Even if a property was in escrow, buyers and sellers sometimes could not come to terms. The buyer didn't qualify for mortgages, and deals fell through. Of course, no matter how slowly Steve got paid, he still had to pay his people. This became a relentless problem. Steve often felt like a juggler dancing on a tightrope. A fire burned in his stomach day and night. To make matters worse, Steve began to feel that Peggy was insensitive to his troubles. Not that he often talked to his wife about the business, Business is business, was Steve's mantra. It's my responsibility to handle things at the office, and Peggy's responsibility to take care of her own job and the family. Peggy was working late hours at the corporation, and they'd brought in a nanny to help with their son. Steve couldn't help but notice that his wife seemed resentful, and her apparent lack of understanding baffled him. Didn't she see that he had a business to take care of? That he was doing it all for his family? Apparently not. As time went on, Steve became even more consumed and frustrated by his company. When he went off on his own, he remembered saying, "I don't like people telling me what to do." But people were still telling him what to do. Not surprisingly, Peggy, too, grew more frustrated by her husband's lack of communication. She cut back on her own hours at her job to focus on their family, but her husband still never seemed to be around. Their relationship grew tense and strained. The rare moments when they were together were more often than not peppered by long silences. A far cry from the heartfelt conversations that had characterized their relationship's early days, when they'd talk into the wee hours of the morning about, well, anything. Meanwhile, Tim, the bookkeeper, was also becoming a problem for Steve. Tim never seemed to have the financial information Steve needed to make decisions about payroll, billing, and general operating expenses, let alone how much money was available for Steve and Peggy's living expenses. When questioned, Tim would shift his gaze to his feet and say, "Listen, Steve, I've got a lot more to do around here than you can imagine. It'll take a little more time. Just don't press me, okay?" Overwhelmed by his own work, Steve usually backed off. The last thing Steve wanted was to upset Tim and have to do the books himself. He could also empathize with what Tim was going through, given the company's growth over the past year. Late at night in his office, Steve would sometimes recall his first years out of school. He missed the simple life he and his family had shared. Then, as quickly as the thoughts came, they would vanish. He had work to do, no time for daydreaming. "Having my own company is a great thing," he would remind himself. "I simply have to apply myself as I did in school and get on with the job. I have to work as hard as I always have when something needed to get done." Steve began to live most of his life inside his head. He began to distrust his people. They never seemed to work hard enough or to care about his company as much as he did. If he wanted to get something done, he usually had to do it himself. Then, one day, the office manager, Clarissa, quit in a huff, frustrated by the amount of work that her boss was demanding of her. Steve was left with a desk full of papers and a telephone that wouldn't stop ringing. Clueless about the work Clarissa had done, Steve was overwhelmed by having to pick up the pieces of a job he didn't understand at all. His world turned upside down. He felt like a stranger in his own company. Truth was, he felt like a stranger in his own body. Why had he been such a fool? Why hadn't he taken the time to learn what Clarissa did in the office? Why had he waited until now? Ever the trooper, Steve plowed into Clarissa's job with everything he could muster. What he found shocked him. Clarissa's workspace was a disaster area. Her desk drawers were a jumble of papers, coins, pens, pencils, rubber bands, envelopes, business cards, fee slips, eye drops, and candy. What in the world was she thinking? Steve raged. When he got home that night, even later than usual, he got into a shouting match with Peggy. He settled it by storming out of the house to get a drink. Didn't anybody understand him? Didn't anybody care what he was going through? He returned home only when he was sure Peggy was asleep. He slept on the couch and left early in the morning before anyone was awake. He was in no mood for questions or arguments. When Steve got back to his office the next morning, he immediately headed for the break room, where he could put his head down to soothe his throbbing headache. What lessons can we draw from Steve and Peggy's story? I've said it once, and I'll say it again. Every business is a family business. Your business profoundly touches all members of your family, even if they never set foot inside your office. Every business either gives to the family or takes from the family, just as individual family members do. The business takes more than it gives. The family is always the first to pay the price. In order for Steve to free himself from the prison he created, he would first have to admit his vulnerability. He would have to confess to himself and his family that he really didn't know enough about his own business and how to grow it, least of all, how to manage it. Steve instead tried to do it all himself. Had he succeeded, had the business supported his family in the style he imagined, he would have burst with pride. Instead, Steve unwittingly isolated himself, thereby achieving the exact opposite of what he sought, of what every single one of us seek. He destroyed his life, and his family's life along with it. Repeat after me. Every business is a family business. Are you like Steve? I believe that all real estate agents share a common soul with him. You must learn that a business is only a business. It is not your life. But it is also true that your business can have a profoundly negative impact on your life, unless you learn how to do it differently than most real estate agents do it. And definitely differently than Steve did it. Steve's real estate business could have served his and his family's life in a way unimaginable. But for that to happen, he would have had to learn how to master his business in a way that was completely foreign to him, in a way that is, I assure you, completely foreign to you. Instead, Steve's business consumed him. Because he lacked a true understanding of the essential strategic thinking that would have allowed him to create something unique, Steve and his family were doomed from day one. This book contains the secrets that Steve should have known, that Steve could have known, if in fact, he was listening to this book as you are at this very moment. If you follow in Steve's footsteps, however, prepare to have your life and business fall apart. But if you apply the principles we'll discuss here, the philosophy we'll bring to you here, you can avoid a similar fate. Not only that, you can rise so far above it to be unimaginable. So hear me again. If you have the will, we have the way. Let's start with the subject of money. But before we do, let's listen to the real estate agent's view about the story I just told you. Let's talk about Brad's journey and yours.
Chapter 2: A Typical Real Estate Agent's Story. The difference between great people and everyone else is that great people create their lives actively, while everyone else is created by their lives, passively waiting to see where their life takes them next. The difference between the two is the difference between living fully and just existing. Michael E. Gerber. I spent my first 3 years in real estate spinning my wheels, working two other jobs, spending my commission checks before the transactions closed, hiring team members before I was ready for them, and continuing to spend money faster than I was making it. That ultimately led to a bankruptcy, all before I'd hit my fourth year in real estate. Part of the problem is the way real estate agents receive money. For me, it was always great to get a big check every time a house sold. I had never received paychecks of $5,000 or $10,000 before. My problem was, whenever big checks like that were coming in, I had that money committed and spent by the time I received the check. I was always trying to catch up with bills and everything else because the income was coming in like a roller coaster ride. It was very unpredictable. I did all the things I was told to do when cold calling, meeting and networking, targeting neighborhoods, etc. All this work still didn't bring in the cash fast enough. I would fall behind 1 month and catch up the next. I was not running my real estate practice like a business. I was just dumping everything into my personal checking account and spending it as I needed it, hoping there was enough in there to pay for everything. Most of the time, I needed more than I had in the account. Like anything, real estate is truly about doing it consistently and daily over a long period of time. I wasn't going to give up. I saw the potential in real estate to support my girls as they grew up, get them through college. And oh yes, did I mention 4 weddings? Whew, I did whatever it took to keep my real estate habit going. The E-Myth books explain why small business people get consumed with their job or business. It happens because so many of us are, as Michael describes, technicians. Most people who get their real estate license start and get stuck in the technician role their entire career. The real estate business can take control of your life. You can find yourself doing real estate all the time, literally morning, noon, and night. Without a plan, the real estate business can and will run your life. Those beginning in real estate are working it as much as they can to get that very first commission check. Once they get those first sales under their belt, the majority go into survival mode, working hard to get a consistent flow of income. The worst thing that can happen is that you end up loving what you do, and you do not perceive real estate activities as work. For many, showing houses can be fun. Writing a contract on a $500,000 house is always fun. Spending that paycheck when the sale closes is the most fun. The reality, especially when we are new to real estate or have not created a consistent flow of income from real estate, is that if there is a slight opportunity to make money, we will drop everything else in our life to make that deal happen. Some will even be late to or miss a child's sporting event or a family member's birthday if someone wants to see a $1 million property. And yet, it can take months to cash in on that deal. Every business is a family business. Michael says that every business is a family business. The real estate business can be an all-the-time, everyday business. Whether you believe you are in a family business or not, you are. Your family is technically in the real estate business with you when it controls your life. In fact, in real estate, you will hear agents say, and maybe even say yourself, "Real estate is my life." A national commercial on TV once told consumers, "Real estate is our life." Real estate is a business that takes place any time of the day or week. I did not have the conversations with my family to let them know what making a lot of money in real estate would require. As a result, in my early days in real estate, my family suffered. In fact, I had to keep two other jobs to support my real estate habit. I was practicing real estate and working other hourly jobs to make real money that would pay our bills. I was working all the time and planning my work schedule around my spouse's schedule. I thought we were working smart and becoming a successful family, moving toward a wonderful life. Families are stronger when they spend time together, love each other, and support each other. I felt like I was connected in my family situation. I never felt like I was missing our children's activities. I felt like we were all connected as a family. What I didn't realize is that every minute of every day I was thinking real estate, and I wasn't in tune with my family like I thought I was. I was young and I wanted to be successful, provide for my family, and live in a big house with fancy cars. Because my mind was always on real estate, I was checked out more than I thought. That workaholic attitude eventually affected all of us for a lifetime and led to a divorce in that first marriage. The scary thing was that I didn't see it coming. I thought we were the perfect family. When I look back and reflect on it, I guess I see why the situations that led to divorce happen. Doesn't mean I agree, but that doesn't really matter now, does it? We still got divorced. I found myself a single dad with three little girls and a commission-only job that hadn't paid me more than $10,000 that past year. I'd only been working minimum wage jobs part-time since I started selling real estate 3 years prior. Now I was forced to make this real estate thing work. This life lesson is one reason I'm sharing this book with you. Starting all over. The best thing that happened was moving back to Kansas City in 1995, just after our third daughter was born. Getting back to Kansas City was a critical part of my success and led to my writing of The E-Myth Real Estate Agent with Michael E. Gerber. In Minneapolis, I knew no one, and I do mean no one. I did not have a list of 100 people to call when I got started in real estate. I had to contact total strangers to get any business at all. Moving back to Kansas City meant starting all over again. I was a technician again, only I didn't know what a technician was since I hadn't read The E-Myth yet. I was putting the sweat equity into doing it every day. Only this time, I was a single father trying to raise three girls on a commission-only business. The difference is, I was now aware of the real deal that real estate is no different than a brick-and-mortar business. If you open a store in the back alley and people don't know you're there, you will go out of business. Most real estate agents do exactly what I did. I sent out an announcement card and expected everyone who knew me to pick up the phone and start buying and selling homes. I was repeating the first 3 years all over again. How many people are going to remember that business in the back alley if they only get one postcard or invite? When people wake up every day, the first thing on their mind is not, I need to help Brad grow his real estate business. To be successful in real estate, I had to get in front of people, make calls every day. I held open houses when I had someone to watch my girls or when they were with their mother. I was still mailing out things and continuing to get a painfully low return on my investment. I did what it took to make it work. I took the girls to showings with me, to open houses with me, and they basically lived in my car with me while I was working to really get this thing off the ground. Over the course of a year, I went from zero sales to about $1 million in sales volume. All that hard work paid off. Think so? You'd be wrong. A $1 million producer in real estate is probably making less than $20,000 a year in income. I will share more in another chapter about the turnkey system that will change your real estate business forever. It will automate your real estate business and truly make the phone ring again. The get the next deal treadmill. The industry has taught us from day one of our career to call, mail, email, or market until we get the next deal. It's no wonder the real estate industry has a failure rate of over 60% in the first 2 to 3 years. The entire industry revolves around getting the next deal. That's another one of the things wrong with our industry, the need for fast money and lots of it. New agents typically try to generate business by picking up the phone and making calls. When cold calling for business, you're advised to keep calling until you get the next appointment. If you make 100 calls and get 30 people to answer, you might get 1 or 2 appointments. And our industry calls that a success. However, if you make 100 calls a day to get 30 people on the phone, you will spend a solid 3 to 4 hours just doing calls. Do that 5 days in a row. Then do it another 5 days the next week. Then keep doing it week after week, month after month. I haven't seen many, if any, real estate agents disciplined enough to generate leads day after day and truly enjoy cold calling strangers for business. Imagine talking to strangers and getting a no or not interested 98 times for every 100 connections. Those are the typical conversion statistics for the industry. Now imagine doing that every day for the rest of your real estate life, 5 days a week, 50 weeks a year, assuming you take at least 2 weeks off for vacation, to get consistent results. That wasn't fun for me, but I did it anyway. It took 5.5 hours to dial 200 numbers, get 100 people on the phone, and end up with 2 or 3 appointments. In the early days, before I was confident in my presentation, I would get 1, sometimes 2 of those people to choose me as their real estate agent. Generating leads. There's a myth in real estate that business will fall into your lap. A lot of companies promise to send you hundreds of leads directly to the real estate agents. Based on my experience and the results I've tracked through coaching other top agents, on average, only about 2% turn into closed transactions. I study the national averages and compare those statistics with my own results, which is another reason I'm writing this book. I feel obligated to let you know that the statistics thrown around the real estate industry are accurate if you consistently, persistently work a system. Just remember that most statistics and most, if not all, sources for business that you will work or may try will generate a 1% or less return. I will share in my next chapter on money how one study I tracked seemed like an incredible lead-generating opportunity. It brought in a lot of money. The reality is, after working the system and tracking it closely, it only got a 2x return on investment. You don't have to settle for the double-up plan. This book is going to share with you how applying the E-Myth principles can capture and convert to get a 6 or 8x return on investment, ROI. These systems can help you capture more business so that you do not have to keep your nose to the grindstone looking for the next lead day in, day out for the rest of your career. Throughout this book, I will reference services and tools you may be paying for now. The takeaway is not necessarily to get rid of everything. In fact, all of those services, such as lead capture sites, web enhancements, banner programs, keyword searches, and business tracking spreadsheets, can enhance and help you grow your business, especially when you apply the E-Myth real estate agent systems to every one of them. You don't need many of them. What you do need is a business plan for each one you use. You'll begin to think like an entrepreneur and a manager, holding your dollars accountable for the biggest return possible. Don't just double your investment. Do not make snap decisions to buy a product or service. Before you buy anything, determine what your business plan will be to get a 5 to 10x return on that investment. Ask yourself, how fast will I get my return? Don't fall for the deadliest sales pitch of all, that all you need is one sale to get your money back. I've seen hundreds of agents fall for this. Most will pay into the system for 6 months to a year to see if they can get that one sale to justify having paid for it. Successful business owners have a strategy to get their return on investment as soon as possible. Get into the black. Smart business owners have an organized strategy and know how long it will take to get their investment back and how much of an ROI they want. They probably won't run up too many business investments that just pay their initial investment back. Too many real estate agents just write a check on a good commission month and hope it will pay off. I have found so many of the top successful agents in the industry don't manage their money or get a return on investments like a Fortune 500 company would. Their real estate business is not set up like a franchise with predictable, consistent results. How many times have you heard someone say, track your numbers? So you attend a numbers workshop or had a coach or a mentor give you a detailed spreadsheet of numbers to track. In one of my coaching experiences, I was told to track 20 to 30 different numbers to move to a profitable business. The issue? I was still a technician trying to survive. I was not a manager yet and didn't have time to keep track of all that. I had to go get the next deal to put money in my account. I have consulted with top agents over the years and realized it wasn't just me. They neither had time nor wanted to track so many different things. When we had a coaching call, we were responsible for bringing our numbers to the call. How many times do you think these top agents showed up with all their numbers? Not very often. However, they were running better than average real estate businesses and making a lot of money. They were in coaching because they weren't getting the results they wanted, or their income was not consistent or predictable. They were wandering, looking for the answers to be more successful. This wandering is the first step of what Michael calls having an entrepreneurial seizure. When it comes to numbers, every business should have a profit and loss statement, P&L. However, in my chapter on money, I'm going to share one simple strategy that will tell you instantly whether you are a new real estate agent or running a big real estate business, how profitable your company is without a detailed P&L. You can know at a glance if you are profitable. This is how you can work toward managing your money like a successful business. This book will allow you to shortcut all of my years of trying to figure it out. I will share a turnkey system to help you get more implemented in the planning chapter of this book, The E-Myth Real Estate Agent. This simple plan will help you work on your business versus just being in your business. Repetition is key to success. My first year or two in real estate, I went to every training, seminar, and real estate conference I could. However, in those first years, even though I attended a lot of events and took a lot of notes, I really wasn't implementing the things I wrote down when I got back to the office. The breakthrough came when I committed to an 8-week course to master the listing process. And I took the same course over and over about a dozen times until it was sizzled into my brain. That was when I realized becoming masterful at something is more about repetition. The more I repeated the same class over and over, the better chance I would implement that information. Most people go to a class once or read a book once. Look at your 2 or 3 favorite books on your bookshelf. Pull them down and read them 10 more times. You will be amazed at what happens. Here's what I discovered from my coaching clients. It was after the 4th, 6th, and 8th read that they all had profound changes in their businesses around what they were reading in the book. The first 2 or 3 times just get you excited and pumped up. The 4th read is when the dots connect and a vision or a plan begins to surface. In fact, some clients got some things implemented by the fourth read. On the sixth and eighth read, entire business plans and action plans showed up to put more of the ideas, philosophies, and systems into action and see results. If real estate agents were taught to apply the E-Myth principles to our business, we would have a chance for success earlier in our career. In fact, the subtitle of the book is Why Most Small Businesses Don't Work and What to Do About It. The book was written for all of us. The real estate business is no different than any other small business. No matter what level of success you've reached today, if you had applied the E-Myth principles from the start, you would be even more successful. This is my gift to you. This book allows me to give you the real estate perspective of the E-Myth principles and the systems that will help you be more successful than you ever imagined. Accountability and consistency. One of my biggest accountability lessons came after my divorce. I simply told my kids what needed to happen for me to be successful. I used to tell them all the time, if Daddy can sell a house this month, we can go to the zoo, Chuck E. Cheese, the park, etc. The reality was the if. This became one of my most successful accountability tools. Kids won't let you forget anything you said when it involves ice cream, pizza, or other fun kid stuff. I would say, hey kids, if Daddy shows you a list of five names every day for the next 6 months, five names that I put into Daddy's computer every day, then we will go to Disneyland in 6 months. Bam! That was the best thing I ever told my girls. Do you think they held me accountable to put new people into my database every day? And yes, we did go to Disneyland that year. Have you read The E-Myth or The E-Myth Revisited? Remember what Michael said? If your business isn't growing, it's dying. I heard that message early on and knew I absolutely had to add new relationships to my database every single day. Fortunately for me, my girls wanted to go to Disney, and we all won. Another successful tactic I learned was targeted postcard mailing. I printed out an entire 6 months worth of postcards and labeled and stamped everything at the start. The results started paying off in month six. Remember when I said I implemented the E-Myth principles? It is about working smart and getting to the cash the fastest way possible. Well, most of the time, the fastest way to consistent cash is 6 months to a year down the road. I'm not telling you something you haven't heard before. Remember Aesop's fable about the tortoise and the hare that decided to race? Slow and steady, consistent wins the race. Be among the top 5%. Once back in Kansas City, I also became aware of the success ratios of real estate agents. Out of all the licensed agents in the country, 5% of the agents are getting 95% of the business, and vice versa, 95% are getting 5% of the business. You can verify the numbers yourself. The numbers are on the multiple listing service, and the numbers are the same in just about every major city. You will find that about 50% of all agents in an office probably close one or two, maybe up to four deals a year. And still, many of them are at zero sales. About 20% of all the licensees are operating as full-time real estate agents. What I learned from all these numbers was that I needed to hang around the top 5% of agents and do what they were doing to be successful. Whenever I attended a conference or a training event, I would go meet all the speakers and shake their hands. Of course, I also got their contact information so I could send them a handwritten note to thank them for sharing. I kept in touch with them to make sure I stayed in front of them and their information, which would eventually help me get off the real estate roller coaster income ride and build a stable, predictable business. Those first 2 years after restarting in Kansas City, I went from $1 million in sales to $2 million in sales in 1 year. I was copying, implementing, and creating systems that mirrored what other successful agents were doing. Plus, I had read The E-Myth Revisited and layered the E-Myth philosophy into my systems. Over the next couple of years, I successfully doubled and quadrupled my business, going from $2 million to $4 million and from $4 million to $8 million. The biggest difference I can share with you from my success in real estate is that I never stopped. If you start anything, you must commit to it for a minimum of 6 months and work it hard. Most people, like me in the early days, give up too soon. They might do something 1 or 2 days, but not 20 days in a row or 60 days in a row. They quit before the big payout and return. Life is truly about enjoying life, having life experiences, and loving those around you. It makes everything worthwhile down the road when you can say you lived an awesome life. Yet one more reason I must share this book and the secrets I learned about money and building a successful real estate business that doesn't run your life. You will notice that if you follow and implement these turnkey systems the way I describe, you will have predictable results. This book is going to show you a simple way to double, triple, and eventually get as much as 5 to 6 times more business than if you don't implement the E-Myth Real Estate Agent systems in your business. Believe me when I say you do not want to learn this business the way I did. But don't expect this plan to cash in overnight. Keep working for the next deal while you're putting this plan in place. The more consistent you are, the faster you will get off the roller coaster. Speaking of cash, I will share some more simple turnkey systems in my next chapter on money. These systems and tips can help you get on the path of running a real estate business, not a real estate practice. So let's move on to the next chapter and find out what Michael has to teach us about money.
Chapter 3, on the subject of money. Henry Ford once said, "If money is your hope for independence, you will never have it. The only real security that a man will have in this world is a reserve of knowledge, experience, and ability." Had Steve and Peggy first considered the subject of money, as we will hear, their lives could have been radically different. Money is on the tip of every real estate agent's tongue, and on the edge, or at the very center, of every real estate agent's thoughts, intruding on every part of a real estate agent's life. With money consuming so much energy, why do so few real estate agents handle it well? Why was Steve, like so many real estate agents, willing to entrust his financial affairs to a relative stranger? Why is money scarce for most real estate agents? Why is there less money than expected? And yet the demand for money is always greater than anticipated. Is it about money that is so elusive, so complicated, so difficult to control? Why is it that every real estate agent I've ever met hates to deal with the subject of money? Why are they almost always too late in facing money problems? And why are they constantly obsessed with the desire for more of it? Is it because there's always too little? No, I don't think so. The truth is, money, you can't live with it, and you can't live without it. But you'd better understand it and get your people to understand it. Because until you do, money problems will eat your company and your life for lunch. You don't need an accountant or a financial planner to do this. You simply need to prod your people to relate to money very personally. From the office assistant to the operations manager, They all should understand the financial impact of what they do every day in relationship to the profit and loss of the company. And so you must teach your people to think like owners, not like technicians, managers, or receptionists. You must teach them to operate like personal profit centers, with a sense of how their work fits in with the company as a whole. A great friend of mine, Robert Block, calls that whole business thinking. That's exactly what we're talking about right here. You must involve everyone in the company with the topic of money, how it works, where it goes, how much is left, and how much everybody gets at the end of the day. You also must teach them about the four kinds of money created by the company. Let's review it, the four kinds of money. In the context of owning, operating, developing, and exiting from a real estate business, money can be split into four distinct but highly integrated categories. The first is income. The second is profit. The third is flow. And the fourth is equity. Failure to distinguish how the four kinds of money play out in your business is a surefire recipe for disaster. Important note: do not talk to your accountants or bookkeepers about what follows. It will only confuse all of you. The information comes from the real-life experiences of thousands of small business owners, real estate agents included, most of whom were hopelessly confused about money when I first met them. Once they understood and accepted the following principles, they developed a clarity about money that could only be called enlightened. The first kind of money, income. Income is the money a company pays its employees and real estate agents for doing their job in the company, including the broker owner. It's what they get paid for going to work every day. Clearly, if real estate agents didn't do their job, others would have to, and they would be paid the money the company currently pays the real estate agents. Income, then, has nothing to do with ownership. Income is solely the province of employeeship. That's why, to the real estate agent as employee, income is the most important form money can take. To the real estate agent as owner, however, it is the least important. Most important, least important. Do you see the conflict? The conflict between the real estate agent as employee and the real estate agent as owner. We'll deal with this conflict later. For now, just know that it is potentially the most paralyzing conflict in a real estate agent's life. Failing to resolve this conflict will cripple you. Resolving it will set you free. The second kind of money, profit. Profit is what's left over when a real estate business has done its job effectively and efficiently. If there is no profit, the business is doing something wrong. However, just because the real estate business shows a profit does not mean it is necessarily doing all the right things in the right way. Instead, it just means that something was done right during or preceding the period in which the profit was earned. The important issue here is whether the profit was intentional or accidental. If it happened by accident, which most profit does, believe me, don't take credit for it. You'll live to regret your impertinence. If it happened intentionally, however, take all the credit you want. You've earned it. Because profit created intentionally rather than by accident, is replicable again and again. And your business's ability to repeat its performance is the most critical ability it can have. Provided, of course, its performance is optimal. Otherwise, it is in fact a bad habit gone wrong. As you'll soon see, the value of money is a function of your business's ability to produce it in predictable amounts at an above-average return on investment. Let me say that again. As you'll soon see, the value of money is a function of your business's ability to produce it in predictable amounts at an above-average return on your investment. Profit can be understood only in the context of your real estate business's purpose, as opposed to your purpose as a real estate agent. Profit, then, fuels the forward motion of the company that produces it. This is accomplished in four ways. First, profit is investment capital that feeds and supports growth. Second, profit is bonus capital that rewards people for exceptional work. Third, profit is operating capital that shores up money shortfalls. And fourth, profit is return on investment capital that rewards you, the real estate agent owner, for taking risks. Without profit, a real estate business cannot subsist, much less grow. Profit is the fuel of progress. If a company misuses or abuses profit, however, the penalty is much like having no profit at all. Imagine the plight of a real estate agent who has way too much return on investment capital and not enough investment capital, bonus capital, and operating capital. Can you see the imbalance this creates? The third kind of money, flow. Flow is what money does in a real estate business, as opposed to what money is. Whether the business is large or small, money tends to move erratically through it, much like a pinball. One minute it's there, the next minute it's not. Flow can be even more critical to a business's survival than profit, because a company can produce a profit and still be short of money, like cash. Has this ever happened to you? It's called profit on paper rather than in fact. No matter how large your company, if the money isn't there, if the cash isn't there when it's needed, you're threatened, regardless of how much profit you've made. You can borrow it, of course, but money acquired in dire circumstances is almost always the most expensive kind of money you can get. Believe me, I know this. Believe me, because I've done this. Believe me, because every single small business on the planet, every operating principle on the planet, whether in real estate or not, has absolutely experienced this. It's driven every single one of us crazy. Knowing where the money is and where it will be when you need it is a critically important task of both the real estate agent as employee and the real estate agent as owner. Rules of flow. You will learn no more important lesson than the huge impact flow can have on the health and survival of your real estate practice, let alone your business or enterprise. The following two rules will help you understand why this is so critical. Number one, the first rule of flow states that your income statement is static while the flow is dynamic. Your income statement is a snapshot while the flow is a moving picture. So while your income statement is an excellent tool for analyzing your company after the fact, it's a poor tool for managing it in the heat of the moment. Your income statement tells you first how much money you're spending and where, and second, how much money you're receiving and from where. Flow gives you the same information as the income statement. Plus, it tells you when you're spending and receiving money. In other words, flow is an income statement moving through time. And that is the key to understanding flow. It is about management in real time. How much is coming in? How much is going out? You'd like to know this daily, or even by the hour, if possible. Never by the week or the month. You must be able to forecast flow. You must have a flow plan that helps you gain a clear vision of the money that's out there next month and the month after that. You must also pinpoint what your needs will be in the future. Ultimately, however, when it comes to flow, the action is always in the moment. It's about now. The minute you start to meander away from the present, you'll miss the boat. Unfortunately, few real estate agents pay any attention to flow until it dries up completely and slow pay becomes no pay. They are oblivious to this kind of detail until, say, a contract falls through. That gets a real estate agent's attention really, really quickly because the expenses keep on coming. When it comes to flow, most real estate agents are flying by the proverbial seat of their pants. No matter how many people you hire to take care of your money, until you change the way you think about it, you will always be out of luck. No one, hear me, no one can do this for you. Managing flow takes attention to detail. Your attention to detail. But when flow is managed, your life takes on an incredible sheen. You're swimming with the current, not against it. Indeed, you're in charge. 2. The second rule of flow states that money seldom moves as you expect it to. But you do have the power to change that, provided you understand the two primary sources of money as it comes in and goes out of your real estate business. The truth is, the more control you have over the source of money, the more control you have over its flow. The sources of money are both inside and outside your company. Money comes from outside your company in the form of receivables, commissions, reimbursements, investments, and loans. Money comes from inside your company in the form of payables, taxes, capital investments, and payroll. These are the costs associated with attracting clients, delivering your services, operations, and so forth. Few real estate agents see the money going out of their company as a source of money, but it absolutely is. When considering how to spend money in your